Okay, we are just coming up on 7:30, so I think we can go ahead and get started. So I will mute all. And as usual, people will have the ability to unmute themselves. Please feel free to do so if you have a comment or question, and remute yourself afterwards to keep background noise to a minimum. Contents of tonight's presentations in the deck, and there's going to be a couple of MP4 video files that are going to get posted, as well as the contents of the chat and the audio track, to our website later on this evening. And welcome all to the meeting. If we have any guests with us tonight, we welcome guests at any time at any of our meetings at the Ottawa PC User Group. If you want to join, I have pasted into the chat window a link where you can go to join the group. It's only $20 a year. Or if you just go to our homepage at opcug.ca and click the join or renew link at the top of the page, and that'll take you to where you can pay for a new membership. So we have a lot of material to go through tonight. So without further ado, I will turn it over to Alan to lead us through tonight's deck. Alan, take it away.
Okay, thank you very much, Chris. And yes, we do have a number of topics, interesting topics, I hope, tonight. And first off, if you were paying attention to the pre-meeting deck, you would have seen that our June meeting, the monthly meeting, on June the 11th, is going to be our pizza queue, the so-called pizza party. So it's going to be in Britannia Park at the trolley station, the same venue we had last year, and it will start at 6 p.m. Now, if you're an OPCUG member and you're planning to come to the park and eat pizza, you need to register, and because we basically order pizza based on the number of registrations we have, so you have to tell us that A, you're coming, B, if you're bringing a guest, and C, what kind of pizza you all like to eat. So if you send an email to that address right there, pizzaparty@opcug.ca, someone will be happy to add you to the list. Okay, so that's next, the next monthly meeting, which will be June the 11th. Okay, next up we have Chris has got a follow-up on Windows 10 end of life.
Yeah, so I think we're going to be beating the drum on this for the next few months periodically. It is coming up as a deadline, and so people should be going into this with eyes wide open. This was a very interesting Dave's Garage video. He's a retired Microsoft Systems programmer, and he had this one. He titled it Windows 10 is Dead. And he says, Microsoft's dirty secret, your old PC is now trash. And it's a little bit dramatic. As you go through the video, you'll see that he's actually quite reasoned in the way that he presents the information. So he says, there are some things you should know about. And so he says, if you're still on Windows 10, why should you be concerned? And, you know, what are your options going forward? And so he pointed out that Windows 10 is turning 10 years old, and they're following their modern life cycle policy, where each major operating system gets a decade of support. And he points out that Windows 11 is a security-first operating system. They've done an awful lot of work to make it a more secure operating system. So come October 2025, what happens if you don't upgrade? And the way he put it is like driving a car that still runs fine, but you've been told the brakes may stop working at any time and there's no fix available. And I think that that's an interesting way of looking at it. So what to do? If your machine supports it, for sure, upgrading to Windows 11 is going to be your path of least resistance, so go for it if your computer does support it. You might have to upgrade your hardware, but that may not be possible, so you have to consider that. He points out you could switch to Linux, and he says that for most Windows users, it's pretty similar in how it operates and so forth. And I thought it was interesting the way he put it. Doesn't suffer for forced updates or telemetry out the wazoo. And so he's not a fan of the way that Microsoft does that, I suppose. He says it's not for everybody, and really what it comes down to more than anything else, I think, is that if you have software that you rely on that doesn't run on Linux and there's no equivalent, that runs under Linux, then you may be in a position where you really do have to stick with Windows. But he says that really for most people, it's perfectly adequate operating system. So what to do? So you can do nothing and stick with Windows 10. And there are the security risks, but beyond that, he says the new apps are going to start throwing errors at some point in time that they don't want to run on Windows 10. Drivers won't be available for certain things. Your latest, greatest printer that you want to buy or something like that may not have a driver for Windows 10. And he says one day you'll go to install something and it just will not work. So if you do nothing, make sure that you are aware of what the risks are that you're taking on. You might want to keep it offline, use it only for those legacy tasks that can't run under Linux or whatever, system you want to run on it. Don't run your banking apps, store tax records and things that are high value to you. Maybe that's a consideration that you want to think about. And then he says, is it time to treat yourself to a machine that is built for the present day rather than for the past? And it always comes up, you know, is Microsoft going to extend support? And there is a plan in place that they have where you'll be able to buy support for an extra year. A lot of people are hoping that Microsoft might change their mind and extend the support for Windows 10. And Dave's opinion is don't count on it. And he says they've been really, really clear in their messaging. And he said, don't wait until October 13th to figure out what to do. The cliff edge is awfully close. So that's it for me for tonight.
Okay, thanks, Chris. I think you missed one build.
Oh, sorry.
There we go.
Yeah. Sorry. Coming up, we'll be talking, I'm sure, at Q&A, but if nothing else, stay tuned for September 10th, general meeting of the PC User Group, where Alan is going to give his presentation on Windows 10 end of life and what the ramifications are and what your options are.
And I think Dave must have seen my deck, because all that material you're going to hear all over again in September. However, I'm hoping there's going to be some updated information a lot closer to the end of life, so we'll certainly try and include all that. Okay, next up we have a follow-up from Phil Logan. Phil, you have to unmute and tell us all about your experiences with Windows product keys.
Okay. I just might add the gamers are still buying boxes with power supplies in them. So if you're trashing a Windows 10 computer that is in the big box, you can probably sell it off rather than trash it. But then again, you might not want to spend the time doing that. So Windows product key. The first part of this slide is what I presented the last time, going to PowerShell and using the WMIC commandlet. And I know that works on Windows 7, works on Windows 10, and it works on the earlier versions of Windows 11. But I've discovered that it doesn't work on later versions. In the newest versions of Windows 11, the commandlet WMIC has been deprecated. Love that word. Meaning that it's no longer installed by default. And it's a long install to restart it and a restart in order to do it. You can go to settings, apps, optional features, add. And I don't need to put a slide in here for that because it's pretty self-explanatory. But you're going to sit there for quite a while. It reminds me of turning on Windows 10 in the morning and going and having breakfast and then coming back and to see whether it started again. I don't really recommend that. I tried it, and it took a long time to get that command. And if Windows is getting rid of it, why bother? Next slide, please, Alan. So WMIC has been replaced by more powerful commandlets. CIM instant and WMI object. Notice the capitals on CI, W, and O. CIM stands for Common Information Model. And that seems to be Microsoft's commandlet of choice. Microsoft plans to enhance the power and utility of the PowerShell, but WMI object is also being deprecated. It's in my new Windows 11 machine, so I'm kind of thinking that when the 2025s come out, The newer versions of Windows 11 will probably not have it preloaded. So instead of playing around with these things,
You did what? Sorry,
can you go back? There we go.
There's lots of people have slide control. Don't change the slides until it's your turn.
Okay. What is the command? I type this into Copilot. I'm finding good luck with Copilot with anything that's Windows related. I've had some trouble with sports articles. They've been getting scores wrong and stuff like that. But with Windows, it does seem to be working fairly well.
Oh, come on, guys. What is going on here?
It wasn't me.
Wasn't me.
How about take away slide control until people need it?
I would, except there is no command for that.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so you can use either the WMI object or the sim instance. Both work for now, and that's what I type into Copilot. What is the command to get my Windows 11 product key using this command here, the one that Microsoft seems to be choosing? You'll get a text box with a command line, and you have to press the copy button. I'll show you that in a minute. I like this, and I'll explain that in a second why this is really convenient. You then have to open PowerShell as an administrator, and you can paste the command with Control-V, press Enter, and run the command, and your Windows 11 product key will come up. So the next slide, this is the last one. So this is what you get. That's, again, what I typed in to get the Windows 11 product key. And this is what you get print out. You can retrieve your Windows 11 product key using the PowerShell, and that's the command that I chose. Open PowerShell as administrator and run the following command. Now, this is what you get in the text box. You don't get the full command. Original product key is cut off here because the line is just too long for the text box. I tried opening this up as a on the sidebar, and I only got printed up to the F in from. But rest assured, the whole thing is there. And the nice thing about having the copy button here is you don't have to worry about all the syntax. Where are the stars? Where are the spaces? Why isn't there a space after this hyphen? All you have to do is press the copy button. You've got a copy of it. Now, this is interesting. This will display the original product key stored in your system firmware. Great. That's what I've been trying to get. Keep in mind this key might not match the one used for activation, especially if your device was upgraded from a previous version of Windows or activated with a digital license. I checked the box on my new computer, and sure enough, there's a 15-digit number that is used for the activation. So I'm assuming Microsoft is trying to upgrade the PowerShell, and they're also changing the way Windows is being installed on machines. What I intend to do is collect every bit of information I can. I'm going to get the original product key. I'm going to keep hold of the numbers that are the activation codes on the box, and I'm just going to keep it all. That's what I'm going to do. That's it, folks. I'm done.
Okay, thank you very much, Phil. Okay, so we'll move on, and Stuart, your option is next. You need to unmute, and you should have slide control.
Okay, we'll give it a shot. Hello, everyone. Something I try to do is maintain my indoor plants. I used to have a lot of plants, but, you know, I've moved a few times, and anyway, I'm not terribly knowledgeable about what plants' needs are. So I've sort of stumbled through things in my life. I had a banana tree that actually lasted through the ice storm back in 98 really nicely. It was amazing. I never got bananas, but, you know, the tree itself, it did all right. But I didn't have a clue what I was doing with it. But so I figured I was doing pretty good with my plants. But people would give me things like an ivy, and they say you can't kill an ivy, but I am the anti-ivy. I kill ivy. I've seen ivy plants, when they sense myself coming into the room, they have uprooted themselves from their pots and run and leapt out windows to run to a field of goats to be eaten, so they may not be exposed to my presence. It's really hurtful. But I found an app that may cut down on the goats eating ivies, but it may help me actually survive with my plants, and it's called Planta. Go figure. So, the only thing that I'm really trying to manage with this thing is the watering, because as the slide says, I'm dealing with a mother-in-law's tongue plant, snake's tongue, some nasty little thing that is actually supposed to survive pretty well with minimal water, minimal light, minimal care, and minimal me. But I thought, well, I really don't know what I'm doing, so I downloaded this app, and let's see what the next slide does. I clicked it, and it doesn't move. Okay. Control, Alan Germain. Okay, there it goes. So, the basics are covered very nicely, but most of the real cool features are locked away behind a paid version. This will let you take photographs of each plant you've got and name it, and you could probably arrange marriages for it if you really want to get obsessed with plants. But you can designate things like where it is, which way it's facing towards a window, how much light it gets, blah, blah, blah. And, where you are in the world, because the sun comes up and goes down in different parts of the world at different times. So, I found that it's pretty good at telling me. That's the main thing that I was concerned about, because I was supposed to only water these things about once a month, which is, it's hard to remember once a month. Did I water the plant this month? I don't know. Could I pay the bills? Maybe. The main thing here is that it reminds you with notifications, and it excuse me, I'm looking for a slide control. There we go. And it worked pretty good at telling me that I was slightly overwatering the plant, but not by very much. Now, all the premium features like fertilizing and pest control and other things are locked out behind a premium version, which is, well, $8 a month, and it's all U.S. dollars, so that's going to vary considerably. From Sweden, I don't know why they're... Excuse me, my mind just sort of went for a little walk. They are from Sweden, and they are charging U.S. dollars, but the features seem to be worth it if you're seriously into gardening. I'm not, so I'm just trying to keep one or two plants alive here. There's no desktop version of Planta. It's only mobile and Facebook and what's that other one? Oh, Instagram. Whatever that is.
Question from Natalie Stewart. Is it only for house plants or does it talk about outdoor plants as well?
I think it does, but I haven't looked into it. As I said, there's a funny echo going on. I'm sorry. It's probably me again.
Sounds okay here. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. And I guess we'll all have to go and try that out and see if we're overwatering our plants now.
Well,
thanks very much, Stuart. Okay, just to remind you that next month is pizza queue and you have to register if you want to have pizza available. So send an email to pizza party. Okay, next up we have a fun topic from Jeff. And Jeff, you have slide control. You'll need to unmute yourself. And off we go.
Alrighty. Last month, Chris posted a mock-up of an action figure. It was rather ironic because at the time I had told Alan I was working on a presentation on fun with ChatGPT. And when I saw it on the agenda, I contacted Alan and said, oh my God, I've hurt my back and slide control. There it is. And I ended up in the hospital for a short stint. But it's, as it turned out, Chris had done the same action figure. So it wasn't a big deal though, because there was only the one action figure, and in fact, ChatGPT is capable of doing much, much, much more. It's absolutely incredible. This is what I was working on, and I had sent it to Alan at the same time Chris had. This was the Alan German action, the Linux Rocks action figure. What I found was basically all I did was I said to ChatGPT, I just entered in the ask me a question. I said, I'd like to create an action figure doll of an image that I will upload. include in the blister packaging a laptop, a DVD, a USB thumb drive, a coffee cup, and Tux, the Linux penguin. So it generated the one on the left. As soon as I looked at it, I went, wow, that's an awful big coffee cup. I know us computer people were known to drink coffee, but maybe the size of maybe that 40 cup is a bit big. So I asked it to make the DVD smaller and the cup smaller. Of course, it made the cup probably close to what it should be. The USB drive was still a little big DVD, but I didn't fart around with it any more than that. It was just to show what it's capable of doing. You often have to go back and make adjustments. The one I had made for myself was the G.I. Jeff action figure. interestingly, there are things that it won't do. I wanted a traditional, like the G.I. Joe doll with the holster and the gun, grenades. It won't do that. It says our policy will not allow, it won't specify exactly what. So I presume that it was indeed the weapons, and certainly that's what it was. So occasionally you will get a, we cannot do that message back. I had made some for some neighbors and friends and sent them off to those in my neighborhood, two of my neighbors here in the country. And, of course, the ever-elusive Kennebec Sasquatch that we continually joke about. Speaking of the Kennebec Sasquatch, he's hard to find this these days because he's out shopping with the new OPCUG MasterCard. So you might see him in the store. But when I thought of the OPCUG and this, I thought, I got thinking, remember when we made those OPCUG polo shirts and mugs and things like that? So I thought, I'm going to make a logo for the Kennebec Sasquatch, and I'm going to get a polo shirt made up at Vistaprint. So when I go to some of the local events in the village, I'll wear it. And people are just going to kind of look and kind of grin. They'll have this odd grin. And you never really know if they're laughing with you or at you. But, of course, that's the whole point, isn't it? So, but speaking of logos, I thought, hey, why don't I throw the OPCUG logo at ChatGPT? And I just gave it some simple commands. I just said, this is the current club logo. Can you make something a little different, a little more modern, a 16:9 format screen, focus on, and it came back with lots of options. Do you want to focus on community? I said, oh, yes, please do that. And it generated a whole series of them. I rather liked that one. I thought, well, that's kind of cool. But it's just, it's simply amazing what it's capable of. This is all Bob Harris's fault. He started, he's our AI guru. And I thought, well, why don't I do something for Bob to show my appreciation? Something funny. I said, here's the image I grabbed off of the OPCUG website, the board of directors page. I just said, can you cartoonize this? And it shot it back immediately. It was pretty funny. Of course, Stu, I had to throw Stu in there. I've known Stu since the 80s. So there's cartoon Stu.
Looks just like him, too.
And of course, my the image on my Zoom, this is my traditional hillbilly haute couture hillbilly. This is what I look like when I'm up here in the country. And so that's what's been on my Zoom page for a while. So that's just cartoonizing the image. Nance and I have known each other, oh, geez, we're going on 20 years. This is the top left is a photo back when we first met. I did a cartoonize of that, but I thought, gee, can I make a the Color Me Nancy coloring book? So I asked it to generate the image as if it was a coloring book, and it sent that to me. My cousin down in the States, she is not a big fan of their current president. So I sent her, I said, print this up for the kids. They can color it. They can color your president for you. It's the Color Me Orange, collection. I said, and I told her, be sure to get the new box of, Crayola crayons with the extra 12 orange crayons. Of course, she had a huge chuckle over that. She said, you're quite a card. You're not playing with a full deck. I just uploaded images of Nancy and I and said, turn us into cards, into playing cards, the Jack of Clubs. And Nance is my Queen of Hearts. So I got to say, I haven't had as much fun with something on the computer as I have with their image generation. I've just been having a real hoot with it. You can upload your own photos and throw anything at it. I thought, how about cereal boxes? I was going to do Wheaties, but it was generating that we can't do that. It goes against our policy, which I presumed was probably copyright. And so when I said, oh, how about Cheaties? It said, no problem at all. And so same with Captain Crunch, Captain Grumps. That was a photo that was taken of me, cartoonized. But when I was at the optometrist, they put the eye patch on me, testing one eye at a time. And so I had a picture of me as a pirate. So that's, it's lots and lots and lots of fun. I'm clicking. Something in a movie? Life is like a box of AI. You never know what you're going to get. My name is Forrest Jeff. You can just have fun. Now, this is actually a photo I took of Nance. She has built her a workshop up here where she can go in and she likes to make soap. So of course she was out there. she's going to shoot me. She's in her nightie and her apron. So I'd taken a picture of her making soap, but I said, oh, make it on the cover of a magazine. And I didn't give it any of the information about inside the artisans. The AI entered all of that. I just said, oh, how about Soaping Quarterly? And it said, oh, would you like some subtitles? Might we suggest? I just said, yeah. And this was the first shot. I posted that image on the right on my Facebook. And all kinds of friends came back. Oh, congratulations, Nancy. I mean, this stuff looks real. It is pretty amazing. You might even see Alan at the new Pseudo magazine, the new Linux magazine. You might learn a whole lot. He's a feature. I don't know what the price of magazines is supposed to be these days. So I'm probably dated when I gave it the price. It's probably three times that now. I have no idea. But these are just a few of the things. Election day came along. I posted this on my social media. I said to all my friends, get out there and vote. Very important. Pick your favorite bobblehead. So you can have lots of fun with this stuff. Linda McMahon, the secretary, made the big blunder down in the States, referring to AI as A1. So I had to jump all over that with some A1. So that was constantly having fun. The Heard Islands, the tariff thing, I said that all the residents were lining up to they were lining up to get their money, making a run on the bank in fear of the big economic collapse. And this stuff, I just told ChatGPT, I said, create me a cartoon like drawing of a bank in a winter wonderland with a bunch of penguins lined up outside. Make one carrying a briefcase. that's what it generated. It's just incredible. The president's accepting a $400 million plane from the Qatari, from, well, they could say Qatar. We always, when I worked in survey, we always called it Qatar. But anyway, what could possibly go wrong? So there's, you can just have all sorts of fun. I said Canada could send him a new Air Force One too. So we jump on. It's all aboard. So, and these are the sorts of things you can create comic strips with it. You just give it the specs. I want a 2-panel cartoon. I uploaded a stock image of Pierre Polyev and Jagmeet Singh, I was joking with a friend of mine. He was saying, that he was only, that the NDP were only keeping the Liberals in power so he could get his pension. Of course, that Polyev didn't win his seat, so I thought it would make a funny political satire too. And it's pretty amazing what it can do. I took an image of Nancy and I that was taken at her niece's wedding. A few years ago. Now, I said, put us at on Coronation Street at Rover's Retreat. Now, sadly, it put a little bit of weight on both of us. So it doesn't reproduce faces 100% from your image. It does modify them, but it nailed the tie, my Charlie Brown tie. It nailed it. So it doesn't do faces really well, but it does Muppets really well. It does. So you can take any picture of yourself and say, make Muppets. I was having loads of fun with my cousin Wayne. We grew up together every summer. My aunt and uncle would bring their family up from Ohio. And they'd come to the country and stay in one of the cottages that my grandmother had at the resort. So Wayne and I grew up together when we were kids. Like me, he's a Cleveland Browns fan, but of course I always rag him and say he's really a closet Pittsburgh Steelers fan, which is kind of like Ottawa and Montreal or Ottawa, Toronto, sort of. It's the biggest rivalry in the AFC North. I, over the course of the pandemic, I was posting photos of the dinners that Nancy was making at up here in the country, because working remotely, it's a lot more time for dinner. Nancy had spent a number of years in Italy, so Wayne affectionately refers to her as Miss Italy. And he would be saying things like, so what junk does she have eaten tonight? And I'd, of course, be teasing him about, in Ohio, they specialize in roadkill. He got a real chuckle out of the book cover. I just said, here's a picture of my cousin. I make a cover of a book called The Culinary Guide to Ohio Roadkill with his name. It came up with the better than gas station hot dogs, which was hysterically funny. It's like, yeah, keep it. So, I mean, this has been so entertaining. I tease Wayne all the time. His sister posted a thing. They were on a road trip. Oh, she said, posted a photo. Oh, we're getting back home, just coming back into the state. And underneath I said, for Christ's sakes, don't let your brother start lobbying politicians to change the road signs. So it's just been a lot of fun. I haven't had so much fun farting around with something. I you know, like Alan, I've been using Linux a long time, so when you get used to long command lines, and sometimes it can be, oh, it just seems like work sometimes. And to actually play on the computer, something I miss. And this has really been a lot of fun. So anyway, some final notes. Some of this stuff looks so real that it could easily fool. And I mean, it's really good. So if you do see an ad that Taylor Swift will be performing at the Pizza Q for the OPCUG and that your tickets are available, she's not, okay? It's a deep fake. Guaranteed it's a deep fake. She is not appearing. However, I have heard through the grapevine that they have a special band appearing. And it's Shawinigan Stew and the Bootloader Blues Band. I hear they're going to be live at the OPCUG Pizza Q. Have a good night and have fun with ChatGPT.
Thanks very much, Jeff. That was great. Be sure to check the chat window because there's some really neat comments in there, including one from Bob Harris. He wants to know where he gets his OPCUG MasterCard. Maybe you can help him out with that.
I'll send him a special link.
Okay, all right. So we have a follow-up on that from this guy.
Yeah, so as a means of lead into this, I do a presentation on AI tips and tricks and things like that, mostly at the Ottawa Public Library. And the next one coming up is actually this Friday at Centerpoint. If anybody wants to come, and if it says it's full, come anyways. They won't be canceled. There's, I think, 35 people registered now, but there's always no shows. So if you're interested, by all means, come. And I wanted something as a lead-in to the presentation just to give a little bit of a heads up to the people there about the power of AI and what you can actually do with it. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to share my screen. And share sound, share screen. So I wanted to have this as a lead into my presentation.
So you want to learn more about artificial intelligence? That's a big question with a very long and convoluted answer. But let's dive down the rabbit hole and unravel some of the mysteries.
So how I managed to do that, it was remarkably quick. It was a couple of pieces that came together for it. I had a photograph taken of me, just a headshot. And then I used ChatGPT to generate a caricature. And you'll see in a minute why a caricature in certain circumstances using this can actually be an advantage, I think. And then I took that caricature and I generated a video using HeyGen. And that's what came out from it. So I thought it was pretty impressive. But to show you why I think caricature actually might work a little bit better than a real photograph and things like that, it's still pretty impressive. But if you look at this and just generate a video from a still photograph, it doesn't look quite as realistic somehow.
Hi, I am Chris Taylor, president of the Ottawa PC Users Group. The OPCUG is a not-for-profit service organization dedicated to help each other use computers more effectively and safely. Check us out at opcug.ca.
Now, in this case here, I think it's a little bit exaggerated on the mouth movements and things like that, but for a free tool that is available out there, it's not that bad what it can actually accomplish. Now, the free accounts have some limitations for sure. One of the biggest is you can only get 3 videos per month, so I've already blown through my monthly quota on my free account. Of course, if you have multiple email addresses, you can create an account under as many email addresses as you have. There is a 15-second time limit on anything that is generated on a free account. I'm not sure how long they can go if you're on paid accounts. You're limited to 720p on the export of the video file. If you have a paid account, you can do 1080. You have a whole raft of selection of voices, both male and female, different ages and more relaxed and more hyper and things like that. On paid accounts, I believe that you can actually upload a sample of your voice and have it generate the whatever text you prompt you put in there, have it generated using your voice. And the URL for it is heygen.com. So try it out. I found it to be pretty impressive. And that's the latest I had for AI.
Okay, thank you very much, Chris. Yeah, pretty impressive. And when you consider this is like early days, it's going to be amazing in a little while, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so next up we have an item which should be of interest to everybody. And this is going to be given, I believe, by Bridget, who has flight control and needs to unmute.
Can everybody hear me? Okay. Hi, and I'll share the screen. Oh, send request for share.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, yeah, I just sent a request for share.
Yeah, I think you should have it now.
Okay, yeah. Share, and I'll get my... Okay, can everybody see my slides?
Not yet. And I think with your bandwidth issues, I'm wondering if this is... There, it's now. Okay, it's up there now.
Okay. I'm going to turn off my video. Except I think I stopped video. Okay. All right. So this, I'm actually filling in for Bob Harris tonight. He wasn't supposed to be here because he was supposed to be busy elsewhere. But he printed out, he gave me some speaker notes. So I'll take it from there, and I'll try to be as exuberant as he is. So, okay, from the top of his notes, well, I'm glad you arrived, because tonight we're all going to learn the shocking truth about cell phone charging. How many of you change your phone overnight? Well, I've got some news that might make you reconsider that habit. We've all done it. Plug in before bed, unplug in the morning, but our phones reach full charge long before we wake up. This creates several problems. You might ask, what is the battery stress syndrome? Cell phone batteries degrade faster when they're kept at 100% charge for extended periods, or when they're exposed to heat caused by continuous charging. Your overnight charging habit is really battery abuse. Oh dear. Your charger draws about 0.5 watts even when it's not charging. That may sound tiny, but it adds up over time. Leaving it plugged in is like dripping money into the wall while you sleep. Let's be honest. Despite our best intentions, most of us will forget. We're only human. And in our defense, who wants to wake up at 2 a.m. just to unplug a phone? This little device might not look like much, but it's the superhero your electronics have been waiting for. This little device reduces phantom draw, extends your battery life, and it saves you a lot of money. The beauty is in the simplicity. No apps, no programming, just plug and press. Then you can go about your life and relax. For those who like the finer details, here are the specs. Notice that clever comparison to pizza, that last line there about the weight. Remember that for later. Now I know what you're thinking. Where can I get my hands on one of these amazing devices? Well, funny you should ask. And there it is, folks, the not-so-subtle reason for today's presentation. Yes, I've been leading up to this all along. Our annual pizza party is coming up on June 11th, and these power savers will be among the prizes. The only way to win is to be there. And did I mention there's free pizzas? And get ready, type in style. We're also giving away three ultra durable roll-up keyboards at the pizza party. And the prizes this year are not only for members, but for their guests as well. So we just decided this at the last BOD meeting, because in the past they've only been for the members, but this year we're opening up to their guests. And this always turns out to be a great event. And this year will be no exception. So come out and meet everyone in person. We share pizza, drinks, desserts, and prizes. We hope to see everyone at the Britannia Trolley Station Wednesday, June 11th, 6 to 9 p.m. Please be sure to register by email. Thank you.
Okay.
So that's it.
Thank you very much, Bridget.
Was that exuberant enough?
Yeah, I have a question, actually. Somebody says they've never heard of a roll-up keyboard. Does anybody know what that is?
Bob, you bought them.
You better go to the pizza party and find out.
Good answer.
Should I stop my share here? Okay.
I have done.
Okay.
I think you should be looking at my share now.
Yes, indeed.
All right, so we're in the last 10. I don't know if there are any questions in the... in the chat.
I haven't seen anything come up.
No, I didn't see anything either. So Tom has a presentation. How long do you need for your presentation, Tom?
I can, it depends on how long the demo is, but I can get through the presentation pretty quickly.
And why don't we split it? So do the presentation now and then we'll do the demo next week.
Sounds good.
All right. Okay. Let me. You're going to take control anyway, right?
I am.
Share your screen.
I am.
Oh, you don't have.
We have to.
Oh no.
Because. Okay, you should be able to now.
Okie doke. Oops. Okay, share.
Lenovo laptop that I purchased from a outfit in Toronto a couple of years ago. Looks like somebody's doing something.
Okay, this is what Caliper looks like. And if I can only get to PowerPoint. Yeah. Slideshow. Okie dokes. Everybody see that?
Yep.
Okay, Caliber ebook library. Basically, Caliber is an ebook library. You can view and do a whole bunch of stuff. It's more than just a library, but it's a good library. It's open source and has had continual updates for a long time. It has, a single developer. It's multi-platform, multi-format, so you can put it on Unix. I don't know. You might be able to put it on DOS. Maybe not. It's 200 megabytes to install the package. You can import and export from many devices. It can handle, mostly it's intended for ebooks, but you can also handle news and magazines. You can have it set up to load in news sites and news stories so that you see them and can see them inside of Caliber. You can edit the metadata, tags, and you can edit the books themselves. You can remove the DRM for backing up your ebooks. You can group these books into various ways that allow you to operate on all of the books at once by either virtual libraries, which are useful for a lot of things, save searches, so you can update, for example, if an author is misspelled, you can search for the misspelling name and correct it. Mark books and tags or categories. And to create those things, you can search and sort and select by metadata, such as the title and the author and everything else that is about the book, by the presence of some data or the absence, by the dates of the book, by a regular expression, which is a kind of fancy search, and by book content, if you create an index. As well as all the other stuff, you can have, if you have a book, you can also show the author's list for the book, and then you can choose an author and see what else they wrote. It has a viewer. You can read the book. You can create a bookmark, and your last position is also shown. This is pretty standard with any ebook reader. But you can also highlight text, and then you can see a list of all the text that you've highlighted by browsing your annotations. You can have the book read to you. There's also a hint mode to see what links there are. This is probably more useful for the news and the websites. But if there's any links in the book you're looking at, this will show what they are and allow you to choose them easily. There's a flow mode for tables because they don't handle being stuck into narrow pages very well. And there is a text search. So what kind of a text search is? This is a super-duper test text search. It usually ignores punctuation, accents, and spaces. So you can look for people's names, and it doesn't matter if you put in an extra space or anything. Or for a phrase, and it doesn't matter. You don't need to put in a space, and it doesn't need to be a space where there is. So if you want to put in a phrase, you would just put it in without spaces. There is a case-sensitive switch. Contains finds every instance, and whole words finds every whole word. If you put in two or more words, then it doesn't look for the phrase. It looks for those words nearby each other within 60 characters. And you can also look for a regular expression. You can also convert books. It can input most book formats, lots and lots of them. I haven't looked, but I don't know whether there's 20 input formats or 200. It converts them to XHTML to store them. That's extensible hypertext markup language. And then it converts the XHTML to the output format when desired. And you can choose a whole bunch of output formats. And it can control the output in detail. Things like the fonts, the line height, justification, smart punctuation, character encoding, paragraph spacing, indents, CSS styles, because it's all HTML or XHTML, page setup, and then there's two other fancier things called heuristic processing and search and replace, which are very useful. Heuristic processing is, well, heuristic is kind of a rule of thumb. So things like text trapping, handling chapters, recognizing chapters and subheadings and giving them a special format, combining sequential multi-line headings, because sometimes people put titles in with two H1s on two separate lines because they want to separate out the lines instead of doing control space or a soft line feed. So it can do that smart thing. It'll handle hyphens, like make hard hyphens, soft hyphens where they appear at the end of lines. It'll show you italics, where italics are intended. And it'll convert non-breaking space to CSS indents. So those are the kind of things that heuristic processing does. And you can also do a search and replace with regular expressions. These are things that are especially useful for handling PDF footers and headers because the way it tends to come out is that the footers and headers get embedded inside the document when you convert it. So this can get rid of them. And there are other native problems from particular formats that need to be handled. You can also, there are a variety of miscellaneous edits that can be done on the way out when you convert. It can generate a table of contents if there isn't already one. It can detect the structure and create chapters and page breaks, headers and footers. For example, a page break before every chapter. Look at to find the headers and footers and put them in the right place. It can insert metadata at the book start so that you can create your own page of stuff about the book as part of the book that you can see. So especially if you give that to someone, then they or print it out, then all of that will be visible. And it can also remove the first image from a text file, because usually images are put in a separate file for ebook readers. It can now, as well as stuff you can do on conversion, you can also go into books and edit them. You can edit the metadata, of course. You can edit one or many books at once, so you can standardize an author name, for example, if it has periods and spaces in slightly different places. You can edit the source with the WYSIWYG beside it, so you can see what it will look like. And you can do search and replace. For example, you could change Huckleberry Finn to Huckleberry Swede. You can compare books to see how they're identical and where they differ. Usually formatting, but you never know. There may be the first edition and the second edition you want to compare. You can choose a cover image. You can merge HTML or CSS files. If your book came in a mess of files, you can combine them into a single file. For CSS files, those are the, what are they, CSS? They're style files, basically. And putting them into a single file, simplifies the stuff that you're putting on the disk. You can check broken external links. You can check for them. You can add CSS file links to HTML files. You can rename component files, change their order, split them, and reorganize all the files, all inside of Calibre. You can also have a content server, so you can access your books from around the world. But if you do allow internet access versus just inside your home, you need to add a username and password, and preferably change an obscure port, not 80 or 8080, but I don't know, 3796. I don't know. Choose your port. It has a mess of plugins. I haven't counted them, but there's bunches. So there's handles, KFX input and output. I believe that's Kindle. Finding duplicates, handling Kindle collections, KEPUB for Kobo, DACSM, that's how Kindle books are downloaded. There's a Goodreads thing, so you can exchange information, count pages. There's a DRM plugin that you can add that will get rid of DRM, so you can back up the Kindle books that you bought. Doing quality checks. There's a whole bunch of plugins. You can count words, count pages, etc. So, in a summary, it's a powerful manager. It's a powerful ebook editor. It has many tools, but you can just use it as a library and just view, which is mostly what I do. And that's it.
Okay, thanks, Tom. Sorry to cut you off, but look forward to the demo next week on that.
Sure.
Okay, there was a question in the chat window. Eldon has a Lenovo E560 laptop, which has a battery problem. And he put in a third-party battery, but it automatically shuts down. And Laurier Computers found that it doesn't have some circuitry which it would need, which I guess would be in the original Lenovo battery. So his question is if anybody knows how to overcome that, and rather than having to pay a lot more money for a original equipment battery. So if anybody knows about laptops and batteries, and especially Lenovo's, the question is in the chat, and we can follow up on that next week.
I would suggest that if you're going to, rather than use a battery, get a new battery or a third-party battery, I think there's if you take it to a battery shop that sells batteries, they will often be able to rebuild it using the original circuitry and just replace the battery cells unless it's horribly damaged by acid corrosion by being alone too long. But I would suggest rebuilding your battery, and it should be cheap enough, and you'll actually probably get longer life because the batteries are now improved from where they were 5 years ago. So that's what I would suggest doing first. There is a battery shop, but I forget the name of it. It's near the city center.
Yeah, you wanted a specialty battery supplier, essentially. I forget what it's called too, but maybe somebody will know and will tell us.
Alexander's? I don't know.
Okay, well, we'll follow up on that next week. Okay, so just to wrap up, Chris mentioned the AI tools presentation on Friday at the PN Centerpoint. Organizing your photos at Beaverbrook, Linda is doing on the 29th. And Chris has got another quick tips one on free tools, enhancing capability and performance. That's on Cumberland on Saturday the 31st. Okay, so we're just a few minutes over. Sorry about that, but lots of good information today. And we'll have more next week. So next week is another Q&A session. So if you have questions or if you have things that you'd like to share, just send us an email and we'll be happy to include you. So I'd certainly like to thank Phil and Stuart and Jeff and Chris and Tom and Bridget and Bob Harris in the background for all the presentations tonight. And as Ed says, fun subjects tonight. So thanks very much, everyone, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks, folks. See you next Wednesday.